smells like Lemmy. Am I right, Mitch? Good morning, Mason. My name is Ron Wolfley and Dark Fries. The Doug and Wolf Show, Savages in the Morning Broadcasting, on what formerly was known as a Punch You in the Face Tuesday. We're thinking of bringing it back, are we
not, ladies and gentlemen? No, we're not. Not at all. But I would say Tim LeCastro punched everybody in the face with his performance.
Man, I
got to
tell you, Timmy was off the charts, was he not?
You heard Mitch mention in the update that the conversations that we had are going to be up at ArizonaSports.com. If you haven't done it, subscribe to the Doug and Wolf podcast. The Tim LeCastro is must listen to. It was just plain fun. Nothing was breaking news or anything like that. It was just, wow. You're not going to listen to that interview and then root against Tim LeCastro, unless you're like a Dodger or Giants fan. I mean, that was just fantastic conversation with Tim LeCastro, standing by the Giants' decision to stay with Daniel Jones, at least what we think so far right now. We're in the Auction Community Studios, and it's one thing to spend a second because the day has opened up as day one, not for the NFL new league year, but really, even though all the meetings have already happened, plans are already in place, today is the first day where you technically start opening up the calendar of 2021. And that is, who are you going to tag? You can now officially put a franchise tag on a player. There's two types of franchise tags. One says he can negotiate with another team. One says he can't. And then there's a transition tag. You can transition tag somebody that guarantees them a one-year deal of the top 10 salaries at his position, but also gives you a right to match any contract he signs with somebody else. The catch is, if he does go to somebody else and you let him, you get nothing.
You get nothing.
So there's nothing you can do to stop him from going somewhere else other than saying, I don't mind that contract, I'll match it, and then you keep that guy.
Other than a compensatory pick, correct? Something that is juicy.
Well, that's a little different, but yes, you're right. You're right.
I'm just saying, if in fact he does go somewhere else,
you get that the next year based on a mathematic formula.
You do get something once again if in fact he walks away. But to me, this is a situation, are you going to transition tag Hassan Reddick? You did it to Kenyon Drake last year, and I thought it was a beautiful use of the tag. We all know what happened in 2019. Kenyon Drake, that second half of the season, man, he blew up. You go back and look at that tape. The second half of 2019 absolutely blew up when Cliff Kingsbury suddenly went to more tight ends, a lot more 12 personnel, even 13 personnel from time to time at the end of the season. Blew my mind, the transition going from an air raid offense to suddenly trying to run the ball with two tight ends. It was monumental. And the Arizona Cardinals offense started to click in the second half of 2019 because of that. So you have to wonder, is that going to be a situation here with Hassan Reddick as well, where Hassan Reddick blew up last year, and will they use the transition tag on him? I think, honestly, he's worth it. I'd give it a shot.
Going off of 2020 figures, you're going to owe him about $16 million on a one-year contract if he doesn't sign an extension with the Cardinals or anybody else. So if he goes nowhere, doesn't sign an extension, that's how much you owe him. Are you ready to pay Hassan Reddick that amount of money?
Yeah, you know what? That's tough.
Hassan Reddick, Edge, 26 years old.
Reddick entered the 2020 season having had his fifth-year option declined by the Cardinals, but he didn't let that deter him as he put together an incredible turnaround campaign this season. Reddick had 57 career pressures to his name coming into the year and nearly matched that with 56 in 2020 alone, 13th among all Edge defenders. Reddick posted a career high in sacks with 12.5, breaking his previous career high of 4 in 2018. Some are concerned that 2020 was just a fluke, but regardless, he clearly has the talent to become a solid pass rusher in the NFL.
Okay, well, the music was a little cool right there, but it did totally blow my mind when it happened. Listen, This is a very, very tough decision. It is. What are you going to do with Hassan Reddick right now? If you believe that this is a kid that is still developing, and I'll guarantee you, there's a lot of teams out there that are going to believe that. And the reason being is because they're going to go back and they're going to look at the history of Hassan Reddick. They're going to look at the fact that the Arizona Cardinals drafted him as an edge player out of Temple and tried to move him off the ball to play that weak side inside linebacker position that Darrell Washington held down for so long. A guy that was going to run all over the field and make all sorts of plays from that weak side inside. We all know that did not work. We all know how many different defensive coordinators and how many different defenses Hassan Reddick was in his first 3 years in the league. There's going to be a lot of general managers across the league that I think are going to weigh all of this evidence, and they're going to say, Basinonians, this kid is worth it.
Which is why I think you tag him, because I think 9 times out of 10, when you see somebody perform like Hassan Reddick did in a contract year, you don't keep him.
Yeah, that's right.
Because it's always, wait, why did you finally show up now? But this one, this is a real life excuse. When it's you as an organization that screwed up,
that's called a reason.
Then I think that you say, you know what? We acknowledge we were in your way, so we're going to let you go, or we're going to keep you and give you the contract. Now, this is really what's going to be strange. His cap number on just a transition tag is about the same as Chandler Jones.
Okay.
Now, when you put it like that.
Well, wait a minute. I thought Chandler, okay, is his cap number.
Right.
All right.
But the highest edge rusher right now is Joey Bosa at $27 million a year.
Okay, how's that feel, Joe?
So are you okay? Like, how do you want to look at this? If you look at it and say, would you take Hassan Reddick for $11 million less than Joey Bosa? My answer is yes. Would you say, I'm going to pay Hassan Reddick the same as I'm paying Chandler Jones? My answer is no. It's about the same number, though. So that's where you are with Hassan Reddick. You better be convicted, but I think you didn't see a fluke.
Yeah, boy, especially Pat P. What are you going to do with Pat P right
gone.
Now? That's right. You're saying he's gone. That's it. Okay, so.
Patrick Peterson, cornerback, 30 years old.
Peterson hits free agency in the open market for the first time in his career. Pat P isn't quite playing at an elite level right now, as he's allowed an opposing passer rating of 98.2. But despite that, he's still a starting caliber cornerback. Last season, Peterson recorded 61 tackles and 3 interceptions, but he also posted his worst coverage grade since his rookie year, and he led the league in penalties with 12. Peterson has been with the Cardinals for 10 seasons, where he's been a 3-time first-team All-Pro, 8-time Pro Bowler, and made the NFL 2010's All-Decade Team.
Led the league in penalties with 12.
Oh, there you go.
Don't let that wash right over.
That's what you're saying right there.
He's averaging almost 1 grab a game.
Yeah, so now all of a sudden the Arizona Cardinals are going to lose both their starting corners. Think about that. Lose both their starting corners and their best pass rusher from last year.
J.C. Horn.
So stop and think about that, Basinonians. Now all of a sudden you've got that. Would you say the combination of the edge in particular and corners is important in the National Football League? Say yes.
Reasonably, yeah. Yeah.
Very important. The edge and the corners. Those things cannot be separated right now. Very, very important. Is it not, Bruce Arians? Very important to have those two things in effect and in unison with each other.
Mitch and Maloney, do you guys choose your music on those? Or are those chosen for you? Like who gets
they're startled.
Who gets which music bed on your reads on free agency?
I produced them all.
Oh. So do you choose your favorite music bed for you and leave everybody else, or do you just have like a rotator?
No, I have a folder of about 500 music beds, and I just, whatever I land on.
They all start with a bass, is that it?
She just has a roulette wheel, and she spins it, and whatever it lands on, and matches it with one of the players.
Man, Douglas, you are so late right now.
Richard Sherman.
See, there it was.
Russell Okung.
That's not bass, that's guitar.
Why did Russell get that one? Russell's not good enough to get that.
Alejandro Villanueva.
I guess what I'm saying is they're startling.
A little Miami Vice from the 80s.
They're startling.
I see. Coming up next, the one story you need to know today. It's coming up on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Doug and Wolf's The One. The number one story of the day.
Your number one story of the day is the fact that the Los Angeles Lakers lost in overtime, meaning they are clinging to a one-game lead over the Phoenix Suns, who are on fire as the Suns are a game out of the 2 seed in the Western Conference at a 20-10 record following their 132-100 beatdown of the 5th-seeded Portland Trailblazers.
When you look at the circumstances that surrounded last night's game and the beatdown, and I mean beatdown, of the Portland Trailblazers by the Phoenix Suns last night, you have to consider how good this team truly is right now. You have to ask that question. The Suns, of course, playing their 3rd game in 4 nights. 3 games in 4 nights. That's not easy, ladies and gentlemen. That's tough on the body, I would imagine. They beat a team that had won 8 of 10 going into last night's game. They certainly weren't desperate going into last night's game, that being the Phoenix Suns, because they had won 11 of 13. I mean, look at all of this circumstantial evidence right now. If ever there was going to be a classic Phoenix Suns letdown, it would have been last night, especially with no C.J. McCollum.
You've mentioned it a couple times. They were 8-8 this year. They had a 3-game losing streak. In that 3-game losing streak, however, an overtime and double overtime loss to Denver. And then they ended up at 8-8. Since that time, they're 12-2.
12-2. They've won 12 of 14 games right now. And just put all of that together, everything I just said in regard to, oh, my goodness, they had won 11 of 13. And, of course, their opponent was playing well at that point in time. 3rd game in 4 nights. And what did the Suns do, Basin Onions? How did they respond? Well, they had a lead going in at halftime. And it wasn't a huge lead, of course, but they had a lead, and they came out in that 3rd quarter, and they looked like their hair was on fire for the most part. DeAndre Ayton, I thought his effort in the 3rd quarter was as good as I've seen. And Doug Leese, you've talked about it a couple of times here. The first couple of minutes, maybe not so much the case. But having said that, I think if you go back and you look at it, Basinonians, watch the awareness of DeAndre Ayton. Watch the way that when the ball went up, he was looking for a body. He was looking for Cantor in particular to put his body on. His tip of the ball, fighting for loose balls, keeping it alive, looked aware, battling for rebounds, blocking shots, follow-up slam, getting fed by D-Book. You go back and look at it, man. I'm telling you right now, DeAndre Ayton, that's a quarter you've got to go ahead and you got to bottle that right there. You just raise the bar and you set the bar. That's the standard. Now go play like that all the time. This Suns team is improving dramatically on the defensive end of the floor, and it's only going to get better the more DA gets it. The more he's aware, the more effort that he puts in it, the more intensity that he's going to bring on the defensive end of the floor, this team's got room to get better. That's the scary thing. That's scary. They got a lot of room to get better because they got a guy who has all of this talent in which he's got to go out and try to fulfill all of that talent.
One of the major reasons why they're scoring 132 points and getting better shots?
When you look at that New Orleans game, it was our defense that allowed for us to get out and transition. And, you know, when you give Chris the ball or book the ball in the open floor, they can generate it for themselves or other people. I think our offense has just been a byproduct of us being able to get stops and rebound. You know, we struggle with that. We have struggled with it this year, completing our defense with a rebound. Now there's been more of a focus to box out, and it's pretty glaring when we don't, you know, when we contest and leak out and teams get an extra possession. There was one tonight on the free throw box out We missed the box out. I think Covington got the rebound, and they ended up getting the three. Right away, our guys understood, like, that hurts our offense. So that's the thing that we've been, you know, preaching is being consistent with our habits. I think we're getting better with that. Offensively, you know, we Chris and Book generate a ton of offense for themselves and the rest of our team.
In this 12-2 streak that they're on right now, they beat Boston when they really locked it down, 100-91. 100 is the lowest point total they've had in this streak. They've had two games of 109. So out of the 14 games that they have been involved in, I would say four of them, of the 14, they have scored under 110 points. Mm. 10 of the 14, they're over 110. And I know I just gave you an offensive stat. I totally agree with him. I think it's all defensive. And in the other games, they would fall in love with the three. When they weren't making the three, they would kind of just, and I just mean for half a second, not throw a fit, but have that little sense of pouting after you miss the three, all shucks, and that's the second you didn't get back. And then their defense led to points for the other team because they allowed their defense to be affected by their missed three-pointers. Now it's the exact opposite. They have embraced playing defense, and because of that, they're getting live ball turnovers, a little, couple more fast break points, but even when it's not a fast break, the other team is scrambling defensively, and they're getting good shots. The big question is, do they get arrogant now? It's really easy for a team to feel like you've arrived, you've had a streak like this, and therefore all we have to do is keep shooting well, and we'll keep scoring. And that's not what's happened here.
Mm-hmm.
You're scoring because of your defense. Are you willing to continue to commit to it?
That's the question. And I will also say this right here. Chris Paul right now, 1 of 9 from the floor last night. He scored 2 points, and yet he was plus 20. Plus 20. Think about that. I mean, that's the dangerous thing about the Phoenix Suns right now. They can beat you in a lot of different ways. Let's hope that continues.
A veteran wide receiver is available. Wolf's thinking about 3 draft picks for him. That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. How much will you pay? Do you need to spend some time with Van Roth?
Not at all. Van Halen, as we all know, the real Van Halen, ladies and gentlemen, without Sammy Hagar, let's put it that way. Not that I don't like Sammy Hagar, I do, but it's Van Hagar, David Lee Roth, something altogether different. But let's
bring in
digress.
Dave Burns.
Is David where's David Charles? He's here?
First of all, in 14 and a half years now of being together, you've never gotten that excited for me being here. Oh my goodness, your eyes light up.
I was wondering if he was here.
No, like, I said, let's get him on. Let's have him as the official judge. Of
like
Van
a
Halen.
Dog that hears the doorbell ring.
It was. It was Van Halen or Van Hagar. We'll let him decide.
Yeah, no.
Because Van Halen is basically winger with good guitar riffs. And then
stop it.
Van Hagar is like, oh, wow, that's a rock and roll band.
You know what? Van Halen was legit at first.
David Lee Roth.
They were total no way. Not at all. He was totally legit. And then suddenly Panama came around. And then he was not so legit because he had fallen in love with his Russian and the flying Russian. And then screaming this incredible high-pitched voice. I have no idea why he did that, but
pretty confident Roger Waters would never wear pants that
totally
tight.
Ruined it.
He wore tights.
There was a lot of great. I mean, Robert Plant would wear it. I'll tell you that.
We don't talk about those days.
Now, Robert Plant.
We try.
Oh, my goodness.
We try to avoid that part.
How
of
about a modicum of humility,
Led
Robert
Zeppelin? Do you want him?
Another prime candidate to get tagged is Allen Robinson, the standout receiver for the Chicago Bears. His tag number, although he's the same position as Godwin, is different because he was also tagged last year. $17.88 million is his franchise tag. They've had extensive talks on a long-term deal during the season. I know they did as well before things broke off. Don't be surprised if they try to get some sort of deal again and then tag him. And then obviously we'll see what ends up happening there.
What would you be willing to give up for Allen Robinson the second? That is a question we ask. What would you be willing to give up? Because right now, I think the idea of him being a free agent, that's a technicality for the most part. There's no way in the world the Arizona Cardinals are going to sign him as a free agent or pay him anywhere close to $16, $18, $20 million, somewhere in that vicinity right there. Can you imagine having DeAndre Hopkins and then this guy? No, I don't think that's going to happen at all.
That's the thing. There's a rumor out that you might see the Bears franchise tag him in order to trade him. So you tag him, and then you sit there and see what kind of offers you get. For me, and listen, I want him. I think he's fantastic. But I'm not willing to trade and pay. If he was under contract, I would trade for him. And I'd pay a reasonably high price.
Yeah.
If he's a free agent outright, I'll pay a reasonably high price in a non-COVID year with a normal salary cap. The combination of I have to trade to get you to release him from the franchise tag and sign him or pay him a franchise tag fee.
Yeah.
And Alan, you're worth it, but not blame coronavirus. Not in this environment, not at that salary cap number.
Yeah, no, I do like Allen Robinson. I do, but there's no way in the world you're going to be able to do that. There's no way in the world you're going to be able to bring him in. I do have questions in regard to the fact that he's 27. I believe he's 27 years old right now. That and the fact that he's not a run-by guy. He's not a run-by guy. He's a guy that is very similar to DeAndre Hopkins, I would say. A guy you may want to go ahead and throw it up. He's got some good length to him. He's 6'2", I believe, just under 220 pounds. He's a bigger wide receiver. There's no doubt about it. But he's not a run-by guy, so to speak. You already got a wide receiver one in DeAndre Hopkins right now. I think they need a burner. You have Christian Kirk. He's, of course, coming back. Christian Kirk running a sub, well, actually, is a 4.41 is what he was timed with. And Robinson was timed at a 4.6 at the combine. I verified this. 4.6 at the combine. Can you imagine what a disaster that is to run a 4.6? And then at his pro day, actually ran a much better time, a 4.47. But he's not the run guy, run by, blow by guy. He's not that guy, and I think the Arizona Cardinals need that guy.
Alert, alert, we have a new mock draft. I repeat, we have a new mock draft.
Your favorite website has put out a mock draft. Pro Football Focus.
Okay, here we go.
I think it's terrible.
Whatever they say is legit.
I think it's terrible. However, it's got me totally excited, I admit. They have, for the Arizona Cardinals, a player I don't think there's any chance in the world is still going to be there at pick number 16.
Who's that?
Patrick Surtain, the corner out of Alabama.
Oh, yeah. Ding, ding, ding. We'll take that and run.
But whenever you sit and look at mock drafts, and the reason why I don't like this one, they've got Sewell, the really good tackle out of Oregon, still on the board
Sewell,
at 11.
Not Zool, but Sewell.
Very good reference. If Sewell's still there at 11, I would actually look at Steve Keim and say, hey, would you like to put him at right tackle for a little while, have leverage when DJ Humphrey's contract is up? I think Sewell's that good that if he's still there at 11, that's not that much to jump up five spots.
I wonder if is it any relation to Steve Sewell?
No.
No, okay.
Great. So I'm interested in that. And then the other question that everybody has, yes, they do go with all five of the potentially stud quarterbacks that everybody is in love with. That's almost a guarantee now that there will be five quarterbacks taken, possibly in the top eight, definitely five quarterbacks in the top 15, which means for the Arizona Cardinals, even though they're picking 16th, there's only going to be 10 position players taken ahead of them. So if they're happy with Kyler Murray, you're, in a sense, got the 11th pick in the draft.
Are you sure it's not Steve Sewell? Any type of relationship to Steve Sewell? Are you sure of that?
No.
Okay. See, there it is right there. Forgive me. I'm getting sidetracked here because I'm having a memory.
I mean, I would
having a memory.
I would say that I'm pretty confident that he's not.
You're pretty, pretty confident. He's no relation whatsoever to Steve Sohl.
Okay, I'm gonna cheat. I'm gonna cheat and
okay,
look it up.
Yes,
has three brothers. The nephew of Richard Brown and Isaac Sopawaga.
There it is.
But I don't see anything about his parents.
All right. What do we have coming up next, by the way? Do we have anything
that's coming up next?
I mean, honestly, I haven't told the Steve Sewell story. I haven't told that in a long time. And unfinished business. Isn't that what unfinished business is all about? Isn't that what it's about? Something you have to get off your chest. Right?
Don't encourage him, Maloney.
I'm going to have to do
you know that,
that
whole show sheet that thing story. That we have printed up?
Yeah, right.
That actually tells you what is next.
I understand that. Okay, unfinished business. Yeah, I was right. I'm all over it. Definition of it.
Wolf will try to entertain you next.
No, you're going to love this, Basin.
You choose whether or not you think it's good.
True story.
At Doug and Wolf 98.7. Are you happy with whatever Wolf's about to do?
The first combine ever.
Next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
I think we ain't done yet.
98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station.
I think we ain't done yet.
I do have one last thing that I want to talk about.
In 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Unfinished business on the Doug and Wolf Show.
Oh, no.
This just feels good right here, busting it off, Basinonians. Unfinished business, of course. Feels good to be broadcasting in the last beautiful part of the program after putting in a quality 3.5 hours plus. Does it not, Douglas?
Sometimes, depending on your engagement, I'm a little nervous to agree that it was quality.
Right, exactly.
So I'm not entirely sure. You teased it. I'm a little worried where you might be going.
What are you talking about? The fact that I might actually call for a beat?
Yeah.
And, there it is right there.
You're
Mitch
just
Irving.
Encouraging him, Mitch.
The year was 1985, and I was attending the very first combine ever. The very first NFL combine ever, Basinonians, and it was in Tempe on the campus of ASU. I kid you not. They went ahead and they took us into this building, Basinonians, and there was this room they took us into. The room had two doors, one door in which we walked through, and then it had another door all the way on the end of the room. And there was a curtain in front of that door. It was very, very odd. Suddenly a gentleman came walking in, and there we were, some 27 running backs, including myself, as a fullback. And there was only three fullbacks that were actually at the combine. So there were 24 running backs, three fullbacks. Dude walked in and said, "Okay, boys, strip it down to nothing but your jocks." What? What are you talking about? So, strip it down. That's what he said. So we stripped it down, Basinonians. Now we finally understood why there was a number on our jock when they handed it out to us. Believe it or not, suddenly they lined us up to the door on the other end of the room with a curtain in front of it. And you know what happened, Basinonians? They opened that curtain and they opened that door, and the guy read the very first name alphabetically. The very first name, dude walked out through that curtain. They shut the door behind him. And suddenly he came back some 30 seconds later with a look of horror on his face. And then the next guy went out. And the next guy went out. And suddenly, word spread quickly as to what was happening out there. Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, you were walking out into a room filled with 300 scouts and NFL GMs and front office executives walking down a runway some 40 feet, doing a pirouette at the end of it, and then walking back in nothing but your jock. You've got to be kidding me. Yes, I got up to the door eventually. following a guy by the name of Steve Sewell. Steve Sewell of Oklahoma, who was 6'4", 222 pounds, and had 3% body fat. And suddenly, I, as one of the only fullbacks there, had to walk out behind him. Walked out through the curtain, and the faces, the smoke-filled room. This is back when you could still, 1985, fire up a Marlboro, walk down to the end of the runway, do a pirouette, and walk back. Having to follow Steve Sewell. The year was 1985, and I was attending the very first NFL Combine in Tempe.
It was only up for 2 days, but YouTube actually posted video of that.
What do you mean?
YouTube.
The jock walk?
Yeah.
No way.
No way. I'm not totally...
You had me for a split second there. I was like, what?
The rest of Unfinished Business, all the stories that are on the cutting room floor that didn't make it to the show, but we've got to get to it. Cam Newton versus a 15-year-old.
Oh, yeah, I saw this.
At his own 7-on-7 football camp.
You're a free agent.
I'm rich.
You're a free agent.
I'm rich.
You about to be poor.
I'm rich.
You about to be poor.
I'm rich.
You about to be poor.
I'm rich.
You're a free agent.
Let me talk to your dad.
You're about to be poor?
That's hard to see that.
What are you doing, son?
It's hard to hear it. It's hard to see it because I actually did see it.
Declaring you're about to be poor?
That is disconcerting.
Yeah, it is.
It really is to me.
That's why we had character counts last night.
That's one of the reasons why I think I didn't tell you about that story, Maloney.
Cam Newton, on a different note, your former coach is the subject matter.
I think Bill Belichick is the most misunderstood person in all of sports.
100%. 1,000%.
He dope.
Yeah.
He is a cool dude. He understands the game. He's like an historian of the game. And for you to just sit down and chat with him, like, it's like, damn, like, he's going back and he's got film, like, literally teaching the game. Like,
what's his right-hand man name?
Ernie.
Earndog.
Man, he's a genius.
His name is Ernie Adams, ladies and gentlemen. You better believe it. He is a stone-cold genius. Just don't have him coach your tight ends, because he'll make no connection with them whatsoever. But Ernie Adams, do you believe the legendary Ernie Adams? Doug Lisa, I told the Basin about Ernie Adams. When was that? 14 years ago?
It took us a while to believe you.
Ernie Adams. He's got a massive head. Very small shoulders and a massive head.
Bad news.
That's what we called him. Head.
Out of the 50 states where you would hope it would happen somewhere else, it happened in Arizona.
Contrary to what you may have heard, 6-year-old children are not good drivers. That was proved once again recently in Arizona when a child, quote unquote, borrowed their parents' truck. The precocious would-be motorist got a hold of the truck's keys and decided to take the vehicle out for a spin one night. That adventure ended up about as well as you'd expect.
He's 6 years old.
6 years old. Grab the keys of a truck.
This is a guy you're going to want to keep track of as he grows.
The child drove past 3 houses, no problem, before crashing into a 4th. Though the 6-year-old was unhurt, a person in the house had minor injuries.
Wow. You know what that reminds me of? Something that happened in 1314.
Oh, no.
This is truly unfinished business right here. It's time for a savage reminder, as a matter of fact. There we go. What we call soccer was once upon a time a violent, even deadly sport in the Middle Ages. It involved an infinite number of players, Basinonians, could take part across entire villages, and often it wasn't the ball being kicked, it was people getting kicked in the face. one old rule book for Shrovetide football, as it was listed, lists any means could be used to score save actual murder. You could score the ball any way save for murder. In 1314, King Edward II decided enough was enough and forbid the game, decreeing on pain of imprisonment such games to be used only in confined areas. Soccer was once the most physical sport in the world.
I'll take Tim LeCastro and myself on that. We'll be fine.
We call it unfinished business for a reason, basically.
Have you ever heard the name Steve Gilbert?
Steve Gilbert.
Yes.
Speaking of unfinished business.
Steve Gilbert, I don't know what that meant. Feedbacks.com reporter.
I love you, Steve, and you know that's a rip from the heart, baby.
And every time the call starts on Zoom at the end of a Diamondbacks game, he will send me a text that says, sit up. Because he gets mad because I'm sitting in the recliner while I'm doing the Zoom call.
Oh, I see.
I'm not on film. Why does it matter that I'm in my recliner? I watch the game in my recliner. The game's over. I'm on the Zoom call. Well,
hey, Doc. Pretty prolific first half.
That is a member of the media talking to Doc Rivers.
You got about Ben and then Joel, kind of a
Jackson.
A
are you in bed right now?
I am laying on my bed.
All right, I'm sorry.
it's all good.
I think we missed a beep there.
What?
I think we missed a beep there.
Yeah. Who was that, Doc?
That was Doc.
Okay, Doc.
Someone was in bed.
All right, settle down, Doc. Let's not get crazy about it.
Yeah, let's do the you.
How did the show make you feel?
Woo!
I was joking, Steve. I was joking.
Doug and Wolf's.
It's all about the you. It's all about the you.
Brought to you by Carol Royce Keller Williams Realty East Valley. Get more money selling your home. Go to CarolHasTheBuyers.com. That's CarolHasTheBuyers.com.
My big takeaway from today's show is the fact that the Coyotes looked awful in the first period and still crushed Anaheim.
By the pricking of my thumb, something wicked this way comes. It's called the Phoenix Suns. Peace and strength. Tell me what it's all about.